We're holding on page 68 in Shabbos, the paragraph labeled Daf Pei Yom Beis, about the middle of the page. For those who are using other editions, it would be the middle of Os Memphis. Continuing on the topic of various things that if a person carries them out on Shabbos, what's the minimum amount for him to be chayav chatos or what have you? So the Mishnah had said that Sid, that if a person carries out plaster on Shabbos, then the minimum amount to be chayiv kadei losud is enough to plaster. And the Mishnah had said, katana shebabonos, the smallest of girls, or the smallest part of a girl. The Gemara is going to explain why they would put plaster on anyway. But first of all, tana, we learn in a braisa, so what it means is kadei losud etzba katana shebabonos, enough to be able to put on the little finger or maybe the little toe of a girl. So we're not talking about a very large amount. We're talking about a very small amount, but that's enough, as usual with the rules with these things. That's enough to be considered something useful, that therefore a person would be chayiv for carrying it on Shabbos. So what's this business? Why are they using plaster? So I'm going to hold on. Jewish girls who've already developed shtei sairus, they're developing the signs of that they're maturing. V'lo higiru l'shanim, but they haven't yet reached the age of it, so they're below age, they're below bas mitzvah, and they're already starting to grow hair on their bodies, and they're embarrassed of it. This is how Rashi learns. There are different other explanations. Tosfos brings a different explanation that you take out the second lashonim she giu lepirkan v'lo higiu. They're of the age of marriage. They're of marriageable age, but they haven't yet higiu. They haven't yet reached to find a chosim. So then they want to beautify themselves. Rabin Hanano gives yet another explanation. We're talking about that they haven't started developing their upper body yet, and therefore they put on plaster in order to stimulate growth over there. Anyway, whatever it is, so poor girls would spread plaster on the area. So according to Rashi, the vote is the plaster would take off the unwanted hair. According to Tosfos, the idea would be it'll help make their skin whiter and clearer. And according to Ben Hanano, it'll stimulate the growth of their body. Richer girls would use a paste of fine flour for the purpose. Benos Malachim, and princesses were even richer. They would smear on their body, on the appropriate areas of their body, they would smear on Shemen Hamur, which the Gemara is going to define in a second what it is. Shenema, as we find by Esther and all the women that Achashverosh brought to the palace, Shisha Chadoshim, Shemen Hamur, that for 6 months they were treated with Shemen Hamur. So my Shemen Hamur, what is that exactly? Rav Huna Bachir Omer Stacked. So he says it's a substance that in Aramaic, and actually the word ultimately comes from Greek, is called stacked. The Aruch defines it as a perfumed oil, an oil that they would mix in various kinds of spices into it. The actual word, the origin of the word means a type of sap from a tree. So it would mean something like balsam oil or something. But anyway, so that's one definition. And therefore the vote would be, in other words, that myrrh, however you define myrrh, there are two definitions of it, that Amnon defines it as musk and other Rishonim define it as myrrh. So then it would be oil that would be made from that or perfumed with that. And therefore it's called Shemen Amur. Rav Yumi Ba'aba Omar, Shemen Zayis Shalahevi Shlish. Rav Yumi Ba'aba says it's oil from olives that have not yet grown one third of their growth. That oil is very bitter, as it is. Olives are naturally bitter, and especially when they're unripe. That's why it's called Shemen Amur, Meloshin Mayer, Meloshin Bitter. V'loma Sochino, so therefore they use that. Tanya Rav Yehuda, we learn in a braisa, in a similar vein, Rav Yehuda says, and pekinun is shemen zayis shalahei v'shlish. The Mishnah mentions in Menachos, so when it talks about what kind of oil you can and can't use for the menorah and for Menachos, so it says over there that you can't use on pekinun. So what is on pekinun? Rav Yehuda explains, it's exactly what we just mentioned, all oil from olives that have not yet grown one third of their growth. So why do people smear themselves with it? Rashi says we're referring back to Shemen Hamur. So then according to one definition, it's the same as on Piknon, and according to the other definition, it's some kind of perfumed oil. Anyway, the reason is Shemasher is a sayer, it causes unwanted hair to fall off, and it makes the skin more softer and delicate. So therefore, so it was the kind of beauty treatment that they did for the women before they went to Achashverosh. And by the same token, in later times, also princesses use it to beautify themselves. So that's the point that that's what you use. That's what the Mishnah is mentioning. You use plaster to plaster on a girl, and we're saying the minimum amount would be the amount that would go on her little finger and her little toe. Now we understand what the purpose of that plastering is. So the Gemara continues, Rabivi, or Rabivoi, as we talked about before, Havale Brata, he had a daughter, Tofla Aver, so he wanted to beautify her so that she'd be more marriageable, more eligible, people would want to marry her. So he smeared her with plaster one limb at a time. So first one part, then another, because the point is, Rabbeinu Hananel points out that when you smear plaster on the body, it removes hair or stimulates growth or whatever it does exactly. It also causes the body can't shed heat as effectively. You end up retaining heat, and it can be dangerous if you do too much of the body at once. So he was careful. He did it on only one part at a time. Eventually, it was so successful, when it came time for her to get married, people were so eager to marry her and even to pay a large nadin for it that they gave him 400 zuz as a nadin, which is an enormous amount. Now, how about who Kusi the Shiva will say? There was a Kusi, or a Goy, who lived in Rabivi's neighborhood. Havile Brata, he also had a daughter. So he figured, this is a good thing. I can also make use of this. But he wasn't as patient. Tofla Bachad Zimna, he smeared her with plaster all at once. Umesa, and she died. Omar, so he says, Katla Rabivi Lebrati. Look at that. Rabivi killed my daughter. He didn't chapsach that you have to do it, piecemeal. That's a Goy Shakup, indeed, yeah. So Amr of Nachman, Rav Nachman says, the truth is most Jewish girls don't necessarily need that b'chlat. Rabivi, the Shossi Shichra, Rabivi, since he regularly drinks beer and that has an effect on his children, Boyan bin Setafla, therefore his daughter is required that kind of plastering to make them look nicer and remove the extra hair and so forth. Rashi points out that beer tends to make the hair darker and tends to make the hair darker and thicker. So therefore, to remove unwanted hair, he ended up needing to use the plaster method. And none, but Rav Nachman says, we, Jalosha Sin and Shichra, we don't drink beer, like Boyan bin Setafla, our daughter to begin with don't need that kind of treatment because they don't grow that much hair in unwanted areas anyway. The Gemara even mentions actually in Sanhedrin that Benos Yisrael, at least this is how it was then, regularly did not grow Seir Erva and Seir Beis HaShechi. So Tosfos and other Rishonim discussed maybe they would grow a little bit because you have to have Shnei Cyrus, but only like a very fine covering of it in those areas. So therefore most Jewish girls didn't need much of such treatment.
This plaster stuff is also not healthy for the skin and stomach. It's not healthy.
You leave it on too long, it's probably not healthy for the skin either. Yeah. But the point Rabbeinu Hananel makes is also that it causes the body temperature to rise if you plaster the whole of everything at once, and that's what this guy did. Yeah. Okay. Then the Mishnah had mentioned that, so you have this business about plaster, the amount to smear on the little finger of a girl. But then you have the Mishnah gives two other opinions about what the amount is. And one of them is Rav Nechemiah says the amount that it would take to smear on Andifi. So the Gemara discusses a few possibilities. One Andifi is, and the Gemara says one possibility is that it means the forehead. So again, a person, a woman has, she wants to make her face look nicer. She wants the skin to be clearer, or redder, or whatever it is exactly. She might apply plaster, like you have nowadays. You have those mud masks and whatnot that women use. So it would be a similar idea. So the Gemara gives a proof to that Andifi means the forehead. Ki hodahu galila. There was a man from the Galil, a Talmid Chacham from the Galil, from the north of Eretz Yisrael. He visited a certain place, and they told him one time, then they asked him, come get darshan for us about Maisa Merkava. Maisa Merkava are very deep things in Torah, though it's actually in today's Shlosh HaProkim of Rambam that Rambam points out that a lot of what he explains over there about the Malachim and the Galgalim and all that is Maisa Merkava. So it's very deep, very deep things in Kabbalah that are not meant for the average person to hear. The Mishnah in Chagiga warns you have to be very careful about revealing it, at least until the Arizal came along and said Mutar Mitzvah Legalis Sachma. Anyway, Amalahu, so this Kamen Chacham said, Yes, I will darshan for you the way Rabbi Nechemia darshan for his friend. So Rabbi Nechemia was together with a friend of his who asked him to teach him about Maisa Merkava, and Rabbi Nechemia explained it in great detail. So this guy from the Galil says, I'll do the same thing for you. All of a sudden, a hornet came out of the wall, machsi ba'andifi, and stung him in the forehead, umis, and he died. They said to him, or the people themselves said, or whatever, min delay dole, from his own is this what happened to him. In other words, he caused his own death because he shouldn't have agreed to Darshan in Maisa Merkava. So therefore, the point is, we see from this story that the word andifi means the forehead. Okay. The next Mishnah talks about that if a person carries out on Shabbos a reed, so normally a reed, the Mishnah mentions, you'd use to make a pen. Even nowadays, sofrim makers, Sfardish sofrim, make their pens for writing Sefer Torah, Tefillin, Mezuzah out of a reed, whereas Ashkenazic sofrim use a quill. But anyway, then the Mishnah goes on to say, if it's the kind of reed that's not suitable for that purpose, then instead it's basically firewood. So then the minimum amount would be, if it's enough to be able to cook an egg, and the Mishnah says, Beitz Akala, to cook an easy egg, or literally Akala means a light egg. So Amalei Ma'abrei D'Ravina Levrei, so Ma'abrei D'Ravina asks his son, Mishmielach Beitz Akala Ma'i, have you heard from your Rebbeim what the definition of Beitz Akala is for this purpose? Amalei, so the son tells him, Be'asa d'tziltzala, it would be the egg of a tziltzala, which is a very small kind of bird. So Ma'abrei D'Ravina asks him, my timer. Why are you saying that? Mishum de Zutra, because that's a very small egg, and therefore it takes less wood to cook it. Aimed at Sfirta. Then maybe even say it's an egg of a Sfirta, which is an even smaller egg. Ishtik, so Ma'abrei D'Ravina's son was quiet and he didn't have an answer for that. Some of the Mephoshim learned that he had had the Kabbalah from his Rebbeim, that it is an egg of a tziltzala, but he didn't have a good reason why to, so he wasn't going to change his mind and say, you know what, you're right, it's an egg of a tziparta, but nevertheless, he didn't have a good explanation of why Takeh's Rebbeim said it that way. So he asks his father, have you heard from your Rebbeim anything about this? Amalei, so the father of Ma'abrei D'Ravina says, yeah, Hachi Amar Rav Sheshes Beitzas Tarnagolas. Rav Sheshes said that Beitzakala over here means a chicken egg. So Amai Korale Beitzakala, why is it called an easy egg? Not because it's smaller than other eggs, but Shiru Chachamim, because the Chachamim figured out, Ein Lecha Beitzakala Lavasho Yoitzi Beitzas Tarnagolas, there's no kind of egg that's easier to cook than a chicken egg. So therefore, of all the eggs, even ones that are smaller than it, it takes the least amount of fuel to cook, and therefore that's the shear that the Mishnah says for reeds and then any other kind of firewood. The Gemara goes on to talk about dinim as far as using stones for wiping oneself on Shabbos. You know, this is the kind of Gemara where when you learn it, you know, you should be giving great thanks to the Eibishter that we live in a time when we have toilet paper and wet wipes and things like that, and don't have to what? And toilets for that matter, yeah. So, these are all the standard things also to have in mind when you say the bracha after yotzar, not just that your body is functioning the way it's supposed to, and for many people it doesn't after all, but also for the fact that you have easy things to clean yourself up with afterwards. Anyway, but the Gemara just, what?
Back then they had to go to outhouses,
and as the Gemara is saying over here, Gemara talks about all kinds of things. They had to use stones, they had to use pieces of earthenware, they had to use all kinds of different things that would come to hand. So the Gemara starts talking about the dinim about such stones. Usually stones are muktzah, so you have dinim about using them on Shabbos and about moving them from one place to another and so on and so forth. So then the Gemara discusses the point. What about if you have the Gemara mentions and in the course of the discussion that if you have stones that you have remnants of tzoya on them, showing that somebody used them before you, then you're allowed to use them on Shabbos because obviously they've been designated for that purpose, the very fact that you see that somebody else used them. But the Gemara asks, how could you be doing that? It's not good for your health. So the Gemara says, Asorah dvarim mevienes ha'odim l'dei tachtonius. We have this also in Brachas, actually. There are 10 things that cause a person to develop hemorrhoids. Ve'elohen, they are as follows. Ha'oichal alei kanim, a person who eats leaves of reeds, so like, for example, bamboo leaves or leaves of other such plants like that, bale gfanim, or grape leaves. You have, stuffed grape leaves that people eat. I guess the Gemara is saying that the good gezunta hate eat the stuffing, but the leaves themselves are not so good for you. The lulaveg fanim, also the tendrils of grapevines. A grapevine has, if you look along the branches, you have every so often there are these little green spiral things that grow on it. That when the grapevine is growing, when you put it by a trellis or a fence or whatever, it uses that to climb up with it. Those things grab on those things, hook on to the fence or whatever it is, and climb up that way. So those kind, they're edible, they're soft, but the Gemara is saying that they can cause a person to develop hemorrhoids. The next one is umerigi behema b'lei melach. The next one is when a person eats merigi of an animal without salt. It actually explains the word morag, or merigi in the plural, literally means a threshing sledge. The way they did threshing, the malacha of dosh. Back then, was you'd have a flat piece of wood. On the bottom of it, you'd carve in grooves to it, or you'd stick in little pieces of rocks or nails or whatever like that. And then you'd put the grain with its shells and everything on the floor, and have the thing would be dragged behind an animal. You would also stand on it to give a little weight, and it runs over the grain and cracks open the shells. So afterwards, you can do the next malacha of zora and blow away the shells, and then you have clean grain. So the point is, therefore, the word morag refers to something rough, like the bottom of that thing. And therefore, here Rashi says it means the rough parts of an animal. For example, Rashi says the outer covering of the tongue. You know, you buy a tongue in the store. You have that outer layer on it that you have to take off. Rashi gives other examples. You have also the palate of an animal, also the base acosis, the second stomach of an animal. All of those have a very, very rough texture. So those we're all saying are no good for you. On this Gemara in Brachas, in fact, Maharsha points out that Avraham Avinu famously served three malachim tongues with mustard. But obviously he didn't serve them the outer layer. He served them only the actual meat from the inside of it. So therefore that doesn't contradict this Gemara. Anyway, the next one is the shedre shel dog, a person who eats the spine of a fish. The dog maliach shel bishul kol tzokai, or salted fish like herring, which wasn't completely cooked. Vashos shimre yayin, and a person who drinks the dregs of wine. Vam kaneach besidur v'charsis, or he wipes after going to the bathroom using plaster or using crushed brick. And the last one is, which is why the Gemara is bringing this in over here, v'amakaneach b'tzroh shekinach b'chaveri, or a person wipes with a pebble, with a stone, that somebody else already used before him. Some say also a person who suspends himself in the bathroom, meaning he doesn't sit on the seat, he sort of like hangs there in the air, squatting down, then that's also the Yesha Emim are saying that's no good for you also. Anyway, the point the Gemara is making is, so you see that to use a stone that somebody else used before is no good. How can we say that you can use it on Shabbos? And the Gemara gives several answers. You use a different side of it, and then several other answers. It can also be where you yourself previously used it, and then it's not a problem. The Gemara gives a few answers.
What does it mean, the spine of a fish?
I guess it sounds exactly what it sounds like, the spine, the actual spine, the actual bones of a spine. Why, maybe it means the spinal cord. I don't know why a person would want to eat the bones of the spine of a fish. I don't know. But
grind it very well.
What?
Maybe they grind it.
Maybe they grind it. Could be. Depends on.
But they're not very long. Yeah.
Could be. Okay, so in this connection, further, the Gemara talks about again different things that you can and can't use to wipe with. One thing the Gemara mentions is that even though in principle a piece of earthenware, a nice round piece of earthenware, like a broken handle from a jug, might be a very good thing to wipe with. On the other hand, the Gemara says it makes a person susceptible to kshufim, to people doing black magic against him. So now the Gemara gives an example of that. Rav Chista v'Rabba Bar Avuna Habuka Azli Ba'arba. Rav Chista and Rabba Bar Avuna one time were traveling on a boat. Amr lahu hahi matrunisa. A certain goyish lady says to them, Oisvan b'hadaychu, let me sit together with you. V'loy oisvua, they didn't want her to sit with them. Whether it's because they were concerned that she's going to do kishuf with on them, whether it's because they figured it's a lack of tznius. And Ein Iyun Yaakov brings an interesting point. We learned earlier in the Masechta, we had Rav and Shmuel disagreed about, is it good to go on a boat with goyim, or should you go on a boat with exclusively Jews? Rav took the view that what happens if the goyim on the boat are under a judgment from Hashem, where Hashem decided that they're going to be punished by being drowned, and then you're going to be caught up with them, as opposed to Shmuel took the view that no, on the contrary, the Satan can't have domination over two different nations at once. So just the opposite, he figured you're safer in the company of goyim on a boat than if it's all Jews. Anyway, so Yon Yaakov says that Rav Chista and Rav Bar Abuna may have held like Rav in that regard. So therefore, they didn't want to go on a boat with a goita. Omra Ihi Milsa, so she said a spell, a magic spell, Asauta Arba, and she stopped the boat from going. Omra Inhu Milsa, they in turn said a word, a different spell. Rashi explains it was a Shem Tara, but there are several other explanations. There are even Mephoshim who explain that they also used a magic spell. And the vote would be that normally, of course, you're not allowed to do black magic. It's an Isser in the Torah. But here, where they're doing it in order to save themselves from the effect of hers, then they would be allowed to. Some of the Mephoshim learn that way. And there's also an interesting idea that's brought from the Baal Shem Tov, that the word is not Milsa, but rather Milas, Mem Lamed Suf, which is the acronym of the Pasuk, Machshefa Loi Sechaya. So they said that in order to counteract her magic, her Kishuf. Anyway, Shayuha, and the boat was able to continue going. So she says to them, "My Eved Lahu, look, I realize, what can I do against you? I have no power against you. You never wipe after going to the bathroom with a piece of earthenware." That's why the Gemara is bringing this, to show that makes a person susceptible to kishuf. You never kill a louse directly on your clothing. You take it off first and then you kill it. You never pull out from a bundle that the gardener bundled a bunch of vegetables together. You never pull out a vegetable from the bundle and eat it. You untie the bundle first. So all those things, in effect, she's saying, any of those things would make you susceptible to kishuf, but because you're careful in all those things, therefore my kishuf has no power over you. So now the fact is she was able to stop the boat. So Marsha, and this Gemara is also in Cholin, Marsha explains over there two possibilities. Either that she didn't know to begin with, that she didn't realize that they had set a spell to counteract hers, so she thought that it's because they're careful with these things. Or the fact is, even to begin with, she would have liked to harm them personally. And even to begin with, maximum she was able to do was to stop the boat from going. Therefore, she realized her power doesn't extend to them, b'chlal, because they're careful with these things. More on this topic about going to the bathroom and how to and proper behavior with that. Omalei Rav Huna l'Rava or l'Rabba Brei. Rav Huna says to his son, Rava or Rabba, we find in many places in Shas Rava bar Rav Huna, so that seems to be the correct Girsa. Anyway, he says, "My time l'shchichas kamei de Rav Chista, why are you not regularly going and learning by Rav Chista, de mechadad an shmaitei? What he teaches in Torah is very sharp. So you would do well to go and become a Talmud by him." Mephoshim point out, by the way, that there's a Gemara in Bav Metzia that tells how at one point Rav Huna and Rav Chista had a misunderstanding between them, and for many years they stopped seeing each other. So this may have been during that time, which is why Rav Huna has to tell his son to go to Rav Chista rather than, for example, inviting Rav Chista to come to them. Anyway. Omalei, so Rabba says, "My Ezel Lagabe, why should I bother going to him? To Ki Azilna Lagabe, when I do go to learn by him, mostly be Mila D'Alma. He has me sit in front of him and he's talking about mundane matters, not things of Torah. So I want to learn Torah from him. He's not going to be teaching me Torah. Then what's the point?" Omalei, for example, he says, Omalei, he told me, "Manda ayel besakise," when a person is going to the bathroom, "loy leisiv behedya," he shouldn't sit down right away and quickly, because it actually explains then the neck of the hole over there opens up very forcefully and it can cause damage over there. He shouldn't strain too much for the same reason. Because the karkashta, which is the rectum, the last part of the intestine over there, sits on three teeth. You have the muscles over there that sort of look like teeth. So it sits on three. So if you sit down too suddenly and it opens too fast, or if you push too much, the teeth, the muscles over there might fall off, might get weakened. But also the sakana, and then the person is in danger. You're going to have what's called in medical ease a rectal prolapse, which is a pretty serious thing. So therefore, Rabba says, if he's going to be teaching me things like that, I don't need to go to him. Amalei, so Rav Huna tells him just the opposite. Who asik b'chayet de bur yasa? He's involved in teaching about things that involve people's lives. You're saying it's just mundane things? All the more so you should be going to learn such things by him. After all, you know, the Rambam says, since the body being healthy is part of the derech of Hashem, because you can't serve Hashem properly if you're not healthy, therefore, fakir, he's saying this is very important stuff for you to learn. With that said, Ben Yehoyada says there was also a hint in it about a person's avodah. The three teeth represent the three things on which the world stands, and then we're talking about when a person is going through life, which in some ways is like a besa kiseh. It's full of filth after all and everything, so you have to be careful not to try to push too hard in gashmius and making a living and other things, because then it can cause problems with your relationship with the Eibishter. Okay, the Gemara goes on to talk about more about things with the bathroom. And nitzrach lifnos ve'en nifne. If a person needs to go to the bathroom and he doesn't go, he holds it in. What happens? There's actually a different girsa actually that says that different girsa that Rishonim have. The Rif in particular says that if he needs to go to the bathroom and he eats instead of going to the bathroom, he eats more and puts more food into his stomach. Anyway, so what happens? Rav Chista b'Ravina. One says a ruach ra, an evil spirit, like a spirit of depression or melancholy or whatever, gets hold of him. The other one says a spirit of filth goes on him. Like for example, he has bad breath. Another such thing. Rashi actually said more than bad breath. Actually, Rashi says that his whole body smells. He starts sweating a great deal, and he ends up smelling the smell, the odor. Rashi says gets absorbed into his skin and his clothing. So the Gemara says Tanya commander Amar Ruach Zuama Sheletus. Right, we learn a Braisa like the second opinion that it's a Ruach Zuama. It's a spirit of filth that comes on him. The Tanya we learn a Braisa. We had this earlier in the Masecht actually. Hanitzruch the Nekava Voichel. If a person needs to go to the bathroom and he eats, Doma Latanu Sheisiku Agabe Ephraim. Then it's like firing up an oven when the ashes are still there. It's not going to do much good. The ashes are going to absorb most of the heat, and you won't be able to bake anything. This is the beginning of a bad odor, bad body. So therefore, we see that fits better with the opinion that there's ruach zuama rather than ruach ra. Okay, now what happens? What should a person do if he needs to go to the bathroom but he can't? He's constipated. Should stand up and sit down, and stand up and sit down, and that can help the muscles get moving. He should move off to the sides, meaning, in other words, Rashi says, he started, for example, in one corner to see whether he needs to go to the bathroom, move to a different corner and try again. Maybe the idea is, like, you'll feel more comfortable in the other area, whatever it is, exactly. Mashana Mazel, so to speak, yeah, I guess. Rav Hamnuna says he should take a little pebble and massage that area, and that may help it open up. The Rabbanan say he should distract himself. So the Gemara asks, if he distracts himself, if he starts thinking about all other things, for sure he's not going to be able to go to the bathroom. Amalei, sort of Ashi explains, no, yasiach daita midvorim acherim means he should give up his focus on other things and focus just on getting it out. And the Gemara says, as far as the first one, we said the getting up and the sitting down, Amr of Yumi Midifti, sort of Yumi Midifti says, you should know it actually works. I once saw a certain Arab to come the Yosef. He did just that. He stood up and sat down. He stood up and sat down and stood up and sat down repeatedly. Ad b'shofach kakdera, until eventually poured out like from a pot. He was even, the things loosened up and he was very easily able to go to the bathroom. So tackle works. We learn in a keva. If a person is going in for a fixed meal, so he's not just going to have a snack or something, he's going to sit down to a meal for a while, and it's not derech eretz to get up in the middle to go to the bathroom. He should walk four amos 10 times over. Walk four amos, then stop, then another four amos, and so forth. Do that 10 times. Others say the other way around, do four times 10 amos each, which Rashi explained. The point is, the more walking each time may help loosen things up. And then v'nifne, then he goes to the bathroom, v'nichnas v'yoshev v'mekayim, and then he goes and sits down at the meal, and that way you won't have to leave in the middle. Rabbi Akiva Perakchi. The first half of this parak deals with a number of dinim, where the Gemara says, how do we know such and such a din? And many of some of these dinim are daraisa, most of them are darabanan. And the Gemara brings for each one of them a drosha from a pasuk. The first one, Rashi explains what is this doing in the middle of Masechta Shabbos. So Rashi explains one of them is how we know that if the third day after a bris milah comes out on Shabbos, meaning if the bris milah was on Thursday, that you're allowed to bathe the baby in warm water, you're allowed to warm up water for that purpose. And the Gemara brings a pasuk by the people of Shechem, where on the third day they were weak. So we see, therefore, the third day after the bris milah is a particularly dangerous time. So Rashi says, since that has to do with Tofas Shabbos, then therefore all the other ones which are similar to that brought in as well. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation, first of all, because that's one of the last ones. If that's why the Gemara brings it in, if that's why the Mishnah is bringing it in, it should have been the first one on the list. And second of all, anyway, there's an entire perek later on in the Masechta, the 19th perek, that deals with the dinim of Milah on Shabbos. So why all of a sudden would we be having it here in the 9th perek? So Tosfos gives a different explanation. The last Mishnah of the 8th perek that we just finished, the last Mishnah mentions about when a person carries out a piece of earthenware on Shabbos, what's the minimum amount to be chayav, and it brings in that connection a pasuk from Yeshaya about using a shard of earthenware to draw a little bit to pick up some coals or to draw water. So now, a few psukim later, is a pasuk that talks about getting rid of avodah zarah and considering it something disgusting and abhorrent. So therefore, the Gemara brings a drasha from that of the dinim of tumas avodah zarah, and therefore, because it's a few psukim later, and then continues with other drashas in the same vein. So the Mishnah says, Omer Rabbi Akiva, minayim la'akum shematame b'masa. How do we know that avodah zarah is matame a person by carrying it? Meaning, even if he's not touching the avodah zarah itself, just the fact that he's carrying it, which would be like a nida and like certain other sources of tumah, kenida, exactly like a nida. Shenema, because the pasuk says in Yeshaya, tizrein k'moy dava, you should throw them away. Literally, tizrein means you should scatter them. And the pasuk, the first half of the pasuk, is talking about avodah zarah. K'moy dava, like a nida. The word dava means a nida. Say toimaloi, tell it go out. That means Rabbi Akiva Darshan, the comparison to a dava. Ma nida matame b'masa, just like a nida is matame if you carry her, even if you don't touch her. Af akum matame b'masa, so is avodah zarah the same way. The Gemara goes on to mention that the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Akiva and say that it's not matame b'masa, it's only matame like a sheretz, only if you touch it. And the Gemara has a whole sugya on the subject. So in this connection, the Gemara says, Omar Rava or Rabba, Tizraim to Omakra. When the Pasuk uses the word Tizraim, which literally means you should throw them away, it means Nakrinhu minoch kazur. It means make them foreign to you like a zur, like a foreigner. It doesn't belong anywhere near you. And say Tomaloi means Ikonis al Tomaloi. Don't ever say to avodah zarah, come in. You always have to make sure to keep it as far away as possible. And that has implications as far as various halachas about avodah zarah being also bahanah. And even the Gemara mentions you have a scenario where you have a where you're living in a house next to a base avodah zarah and you have a common wall between you and the wall collapses, that the stones of the wall are matame, or some of them at least are matame anyway. So you have all kinds of dinim like that. The whole thing is dirabam. So the Gemara goes on to mention. Now the Gemara starts the next piece with a question: is there a minimum size for avodah zarah to be metame? Most other sources of tumah, there's a minimum size. A sheretz, there's the size of a lentil. A nevela or a mess, there's the size of a kazayas and so forth. Is there a minimum size for an avodah zarah that's metame? So the Gemara says, well, no, of course not. Tanenon, we learn in a brisa that you have a pasuk that describes at one point when the Jewish people were worshiping avodah zarah by a simulahem baal bris lelekim. They made for themselves baal bris. A baal is a general term for many different types of avodah zarah that were worshipped in that part of the world, and they called it baal bris. And they made it their god. So what specifically was this? Zez zvuv baal ekron. This was zvuv, the baal of ekron. So that is actually that in these psukim, it doesn't mention this. It actually mentions it in a whole different context at the beginning of Malachim Beis. At the beginning of Malachim Beis, it tells about how Ahaziah, one of the kings of Yisrael, who was a Rosha, all the kings of Yisrael were Roshoim, but anyway, So he fell through a lattice and he was very badly wounded. So now he sends messengers. Instead of sending messengers to go to a Navi or ask the Urim Vetumim or whatever, whether he'll recover, he sends messengers to go ask by Baal Zvuv, the Kei Ekron, the idol of Ekron, whether he's going to recover. And on the way, the Pasuk describes the messengers met up with Eliyahu HaNavi, and Eliyahu tells them, go back to Ahaziah and tell him, because you did that, therefore you're going to die, you're not going to recover. It's all, whatever, a whole long story over there.
Zvuv is a fly.
Zvuv means a fly, so yeah. So that's the point, in other words. So in other words, they had an Avodah Zarah in the shape and in the size of a fly, of a fly. The Malamed, Shekol Echad V'Echad Osa D'mus Yirasei. So each person would make an image of his Getchke, or Manicha B'Soich Kisei, and keep it in his pocket. Kivin Shezoichra, and whenever he remembered it, Motzim Atoich Kisei, Mechabko Menashka, he would take out of his pocket and hug it and kiss it. So we see, in other words, that an Avodah Zarah can even be even the small of the size of a fly. So Tosfos explains, in other words, that what happened was, like, since the point, how do we know that Baal Bris means that kind of thing? So Tosfos explains, because since we're saying that they made it Baal Bris, means, in other words, in effect, they made a bris with it, like they made a covenant, so to speak, that we're going to always have this getchka. So how do they do that? By making it miniature size. Marsha says a further detail on it. Well, this posik in Shoftim by a similar hand, Baal Bris Lelikim, is taking place after Gideon passed away. Now, where did Gideon begin his career? You have in the Pesukim, his father himself was an Ovid of a Desarta. He had a Mizbeach, he had a statue, he had an Asherah, he had a cow that he had been fattening up for years for Avodah Zarah, and Hashem told Gideon to go and destroy all of them and bring the cow as a korban and so forth, and he did. So now what happens throughout Gideon's times then, the Jewish people weren't worshipping Avodah Zarah. In general, in the times of all the, in each time the Shofet was active, then he was able to keep the Jewish people on the right path. But now, after he passed away, people came up with an idea. They said, you know what? When you have one big getchka like that, then it's very easy for another Gideon to come and destroy it. You know what we'll do? We'll decentralize things from now on, while everybody will have their little tiny Avodah Zarah in their pocket, and that way it'll be impossible to destroy all of them. So we see that they had Avodah Zarahs, even small, tiny ones, like the size of a fly.
Nowadays, they take out the smartphones and kiss
that. There's that, yeah. There is an interesting thing, actually, that the Yerushalmi brings on this, another meaning of Baal Bris. The word, we think of, what do we think of Bris? We think of that, of the part of the body where Bris takes place. They actually made images of that part of the body, but they made them miniature, like the size of a fly. Therefore, it's called Baal Bris, because it's actually associated with the Bris, although they used it in a twisted way. And it's also called Baal Zvuv, because it was the size and shape of a fly. I mean, not the shape, it was the size of a fly. Yeah. Anyway, the point is that they had even tiny little Avodah Zarahs like that. Then the next Mishnah there in this Perek goes on to talk about another one of these dinim that we have a remez for and a pasuk. How do we know that a boat is not mekabel tumah? And the Mishnah brings a pasuk from which gives us a hint for that concept. So the Gemara goes into the details of tumah v'tahara of boats, and then in that connection it mentions that there is a type of boat that is mekabel tumah, a river boat. Specifically, the Mishnah calls it Sfinas HaYarden, the kind of boats that go on the Yarden River. You have to remember, the Yarden is the only permanent river in Eretz Yisrael. All the other rivers and streams in Eretz Yisrael are mostly just temporary things. So the only one that's navigable by boats is the Yarden. Anyway, so Omer Chanina ben Akavya, mipnei ma omru sfinas ha-yarden tmeya. Why did the Chachamim tell us that a Yarden boat is mekabel tumah? Mipnei shetoyin and oisa biyabosha, because they load it up on the land, umeridin oisa lamayim, and only then they drag it down to the water. So therefore, it's considered more like a land. So it's considered more like a land vehicle rather than one that goes exclusively in the water. So the Gemara says, "Amar of Yehuda Amar Rab." From this, you learn an important lesson. Lo olam al yimna odim asatzim beis hamedrash v'afti l'shar achas. A person should never stay away from the beis hamedrash even for a short time. Shari kamash shonim nishnas mishna zuba beis hamedrash, because this medrash about the sfinas hayarden had been taught for many years in the beis hamedrash. Valonis is gala timer, but nobody knew the reason behind it. Why is a sfina sayyadin different than every other kind of boat? Adjabar Rechanina ben Akavya came and explained it. And if you hadn't been in the Beis Medrash that day, then you would never know the answer. In this connection, the Gemara continues, Amar of Yonason, another way of looking at it, even when a person is dying, he should never stay away from the Beis Medrash. Now, Maharshal says, look, practically speaking, he can't really come to the Beis Medrash when he's dying, but it means at least he should still be learning Torah at that time. On the other hand, Ben Yehoyada says we could mean maybe Misa over here doesn't mean actual death. Maybe it just means Yisurim. So even when a person is suffering Yisurim, he should still be coming to the Beis Medrash. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Zoi sa Torah odum ki yomus ba'ayel. This is the Torah when a person dies in a tent. And the simple meaning is this is the Torah of what happens when a person dies in a tent, that you have tumas oil and you have the whole thing of being sprinkled with paradum water. But we darshan, it means afilu b'shas misa to heyesik b'torah. Even when a person is on the verge of death, he should still be learning Torah. Omer Rish Lakish, and further Rish Lakish says on this, ein divrei Torah miskaimin elav misha memis atzmei aleha. A divrei Torah lasts only by a person who kills himself over them, who's willing to give up all the gashmiistic pleasures in order to learn Torah. Shenema zois ha-Torah, adam ki yomus boil, the same drasha. When is the Torah? When a person is ready to die in the tent of Torah. I mentioned before a vote that I once saw on this that by the same token, for example, when you were mentioning smartphones a minute ago, but the same thing applies to other kinds of phones as well. The same way as when a person's dead, he doesn't answer his phone. The same way when a person's learning Torah, he ought not to be answering his phone or checking it or whatever either. Gamba Gittin Perak Hanizokin. This is also in Hanizokin, in the Sugya of the Churban over there. It mentions it incidentally as well. That would be another way of looking at it. Yeah, that's true. A little more geschmack away. Yeah, okay. Whatever it takes, whatever it takes to motivate. Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Geula, Vav Year, 21st of the Omer. The complete Eretz Yisrael, as we know, is the place of the ten lands that were bequeathed to the Jewish people as an eternal heritage, which we have as a Yerusha ever since Bris Bein Absorim. So in actuality, at the time, the Jewish people got only seven of them, and three of them are reserved for the Moshe Mashiach. So the Rebbe talked about the Chiddush now will be that the Jewish people will get those extra three lands, the Knezi v'Kadmoni, they'll get them unlike the other seven where they had to conquer in war. These three, they'll get B'darkei Noyim and B'darkei Shalom, because since, as the Rambam says, at that time there won't be hunger or war, etc. So the Goyim will give over those three lands of Keni, Knezi, and Kadmoni to the Jewish people with their free will. And the Gemara actually in Bava Basra has a few different explanations what they are. The most usual explanation, I think Rashi brings it on the Pasuk, or if not, then it's brought somewhere, is that they're Amun Moyav and Edom, where, you know, when they were passing through over there, Hashem told them, don't attack Edom, don't attack Moyav, don't attack Amun, because I gave them to Bnei Esav and Bnei Loit. So the most standard explanation is that they're those, but the Gemara in Bava Basra brings a couple of other possibilities as well. Then The nowadays, those would be parts of Jordan, mostly. Parts of Jordan and maybe a little bit of Saudi Arabia. No, so yeah, again, the Gemara in Bava Basra has a few other explanations where they are. Some of them seem to be places in Turkey or maybe Taqi and Iraq or whatever. With that said, also, Bechlal, you have Yechezkel, when he talks about the borders of Eretz Yisrael, Allah said, love it, he lists the borders. Rashi over there explains that all the landmarks that he gives over there are identical to the ones in Parshas Maaseh, and therefore, in other words, he's saying that Eretz Yisrael will be the same size as before. On the other hand, other Mephoshim explain that the landmarks he's giving are a much expanded area, and therefore that Eretz Yisrael is going to be much bigger than it was originally. Okay. Halachas, more about Tatov Vametiv and Shechianu. If a person receives a present, and I guess we're talking about a significant present, then he says Tatov Vametiv because it's good for both of them. Because if the recipient is an oni, then the other person has the schus of tzedakah. And if the recipient is rich, then the other guy is happy that the rich person is willing to accept a gift from him. With that said, the Alter Rebbe says that there are those who disagree and say instead of Atov HaMeitiv, you should say only Shech Yonim in that case. Another din, if a person buys new Sfarim, he doesn't say Shech Yonu because mitzvahs lav lehonis nitnu, the fact that a person uses things for a mitzvah is not considered a hana, so he can't say now that he has a hana from it such that it should warrant saying Shech Yonu. Then another din, if a person buys something not particularly important, like we talked about yesterday and the day before, a person buys a shirt or shoes or socks or whatever, you don't make Shech Yonu, even if he's poor and he is happy with them. As far as if a person is very rich and he buys the kind of things where the average person would be happy with them, but he being rich, it's not so important to him. Also, he wouldn't make a bracha, which again goes back to why it is that for the most part, we don't say shechianu on buying new clothes nowadays, unless it's like something really special, like a new silk kapata maybe or something like that.